jurors were sent to deliberations in the salacious trial of Samantha Hall, nicknamed Femme Fatale in the tabloids.
Charged with first-degree murder, an arguably risky charge given that the victim, Troy Singer, died of injury during a lone sex act.
Your verdict should not be influenced by feelings of prejudice, bias, or sympathy. Your verdict must be based on the evidence.
Samantha Hall faces a murder conviction in the death of Troy Singer, her submissive lover she instructed to hang with a rope in her absence, finding her responsible for intent, negligence, or reasonable conduct will be the difference between a first-degree, manslaughter, or not guilty verdict. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress. We're all familiar with closing arguments, the concluding portion of a trial, the final sales pitch from each side. During these arguments, the lawyers have more freedom than at any other time at trial, but there are still restrictions. For example, lawyers can't vouch for witnesses' credibility. They can't give their own opinions. And they can't, quote, attempt to exhort the jury to irrational, emotional behavior.
In America, you don't have to pull the trigger on a gun to be responsible for shooting someone. If you pay a sniper to take someone's life, you are a murderer. If you give someone a glass of poisonous Kool-Aid and convince them to drink it, you are a murderer. If you trick or lead or otherwise compel a person to take their own life, you are a murderer. Samantha bought a rope to use on May 1st. She then tied a knot with which Troy was to be hanged. She placed a stool under the rope. She told Troy to hang himself. She told him to wait until he was turning blue and barely conscious before attempting to save his own life. Troy Singer is dead today because of the actions Samantha Hall took. Those actions transcend gross negligence. What happened on May 1st was murder.
If this was any other autoerotic asphyxiation, we wouldn't be sitting in this courtroom. 1,000 people die from autoerotic asphyxiation a year. 1,000. Troy Singer was a successful, intelligent man. He didn't inherit his wealth. He earned it. Troy was savvy. He was driven. He knew what he wanted. Troy liked being choked. He liked feeling pain, and he liked being told what to do. Miss Lardy was fond of analogies in her closing. I think I'll match her one. If you give someone a knife and they slit their throat, are you responsible? Samantha Hall took measures to ensure Troy Singer's safety on May 1st. She tied a quick release knot. She ensured his feet would remain on the floor. She told him to send her a picture afterwards so she'd know he was okay. When she didn't receive that confirmation, she called the police. Do those actions sound like the work of someone who wanted Troy dead? Let me remind you, Troy had the ultimate responsibility of knowing his own limitations. There was one person in that room. Please, do not find a verdict that will infringe on the rights of what people choose to do with their own bodies. Thank you.
$40,000 cash. A big, beautiful house in Winter Park valued at $700,000.
A commitment to rekindle their relationship.
Other men.
Blazing sexual chemistry.
If 10 to 25% of our population practice BDSM, how many might fall prey to lethal acts committed to lovers? Do not send a message to killers that they can get away with murder if they do it in their bedroom.
In America, we do not judge criminal actions by ignorance or intolerance. We may not understand why Samantha and Troy chose to interact the way they did, but that does not make it wrong. And it certainly doesn't make it illegal.
Rules for deliberations. Number one, you must follow the law as it is set out in these instructions. If you fail to follow the law, your verdict will be a miscarriage of justice. There is no reason for failing to follow the law in this case. All of us are depending on you to make a wise and legal decision in this matter. Number two, this case must be decided only upon the evidence that you have heard from the testimony of the witnesses and have seen in the form of the exhibits and evidence and these instructions. Number 3. This case must not be decided for or against anyone because you feel sorry for anyone or are angry at anyone. Number 4. Remember, the lawyers are not on trial. Your feelings about them should not influence your decision in this case. Number 5. Your duty is to determine if the defendant has been proven guilty or not in accordance with the law. Number 6. Whatever verdict you render must be unanimous. That is, each juror must agree to the same verdict. Number 7. Your verdict should not be influenced by feelings of prejudice, bias, or sympathy. Your verdict must be based on the evidence and on the law contained in these instructions. How's everyone holding up?
It's been a long week.
Yeah, I for one will look forward to this being all done with.
Yeah.
It's just hard, like going home and not being able to talk to my wife about it, and clearly she can see the toll that it's taken. It's hard to separate yourself from hearing all these horrible things all day, and I can't even talk to her about it. And then, you know, you hear people from our church group talking about the case, and they want to know your opinion. You can't say anything to them, and I'll be happy when this is over with. Also,
well,
I hope we make the right decision. I want justice to be done, and
I have a 14-month-old, and it's been hard being away from her all this time, and I know she's probably feeling my stress when I go home, and she obviously can't talk yet, but I know I can definitely tell that my behavior, my emotions are having an effect on, you know, her, and then also obviously my husband. Like you said, we can't even talk to them about it. It definitely is trying.
Who's been watching her all week?
Oh, well, my husband had to take off work to watch her, which has been really tough.
Yeah,
because, you know, childcare is so expensive. So
I've been serving in my husband's business doing administrative work, so he's had to hire temp people while I'm gone, and he's complaining every time I come home about how bad they are and how he needs me back, and I'm like, I can't help it.
But luckily we had this lavish jury salary.
Oh, yeah.
I might be able to afford gas.
I'm feeling a lot like you guys. I'm also sick of jokes being made to me, like passersby when I leave the courthouse, and like
the
subject of the case is just want to talk about it.
And
all
signs
the time.
And just
protesters outside. Exactly.
So is anyone else feeling that pressure of the public scrutiny?
Absolutely.
What we decide in this room is going to be scrutinized for a very long time.
Well, either way, I'm sure the case is going to be appealed. I mean, I hate to say that, but I just feel like there's an appeal waiting.
Yeah, but we can't think about that.
I know we can't. I know we can't. I just feel like it's going to be hard.
But I'm also just... I'm feeling the weight of this woman's fate.
Yeah,
of course.
And I hope that we arrive to the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because it's not just her life that's going to be affected by this verdict.
Are you
going
to talk to the press afterwards? Is anyone?
I wasn't planning on it.
I wasn't planning on it.
No, because obviously
never want to see the press ever again.
There's plenty of them out there, and this is everywhere. I've tried really hard to not watch any of it, but it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Better if this was just about a traffic violation or something, but I feel like everybody's going to want to know why we voted one way and what made us do that.
And how would it affect our lives.
Exactly. Because
now everyone knows
who we
voted away, they don't like.
I think it's bad enough to hopefully we'll all walk away with a decision that we feel like we made the right decision and we're comfortable with it. And I think it's enough to have to deal with the weight of that, but to then have the entire public debating whether we did the right thing or not.
Well, we're going to disappoint one group or the other.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's as long as we... feel confident
as long as our conscience is clear.
That's all that
You know, you asked me about my feelings about things before, and I feel like I'm a much more tolerant, open person than a lot of people that go to our church. So I'm also just thinking of, you know, what's everybody going to say on Sunday if we get to a guilty verdict, or if we get to a not guilty verdict. What are they all going to say? Because they all think that she's guilty just because she's a part of this. And they all mm-hmm. think this whole lifestyle is a sin. And I just think that there's way more judgmental people out there who, you know.
But we also have to be careful. We're not making a decision because we're worried about the ramifications on our life.
I just wish I felt more protected. Like, there's no anonymity. Yes.
Yeah.
And the fact that it has to be a unanimous decision means you can't even hide behind the fact that, like, oh, maybe I was the voice of dissent in the room, but a majority outruled me.
I wish it could have been a closed court.
But then also, just what are we supposed to do if it's a situation where one person believes something really strongly and everybody else doesn't? Are they supposed to just compromise what they think for the sake of making a decision, or are they supposed to hold out?
No, it's the rest of our job to try to convince that one person.
Yeah, that's we're going to have to negotiate.
That's what it'll come down to.
Exactly.
I mean, no matter what, I know that there's been a lot of things said in this room. I respect all of you, and I hope people do stand up for whatever they believe and whatever their values are on all sides. I hope more than anything, though, that we figure out what facts are important, what facts we deem true, what may have been skewed, and we take opinion and prejudice out of the equation.
And just try and focus on the evidence.
Yeah.
As circumstantial as
we
it
have
is.
To.
Speaking of the evidence, aside from not being able to see the actual knot that she tied.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that we have questions about or that we feel like we're missing? Or is there anything from the case that we haven't talked about or gone through that people feel like we should?
Understand all the exhibits that have been brought forward.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
isn't really evidence, but I just wish I knew Troy better.
Yeah. They didn't really bring any character witnesses in for him, which I thought was a little...
They didn't say much about his life.
I mean, they talked to his ex, you know, his ex...
Melanie.
His ex-dom. Yeah.
Well, and
his ex-girlfriend. Ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was... co-workers, nothing.
Which
right,
I guess
family?
might be evidence in and of itself about that's kind of the guy he was. You know, he's just kind of by himself doing
the
stuff.
I think there's no doubt that was the kind of guy he is. Yeah. We've seen text messages. We've seen evidence that he did enjoy this and that in a way it was consensual.
Right.
I would love to know if, again, it's not really evidence. It's just more information I wish I had. I would love to know if calling local police over 911 has ever turned out to be a great thing, has ever turned out to be a great decision. I wish a local police officer might have been able to get that testimony that I'm glad my department was called because we could dispatch services more efficiently.
Right. Yeah.
We knew the neighborhood better. And
I'm glad you brought that up because I did have one question about that. I remember once that there was two people who were drunk coming home from wherever they were coming from, and they were sort of arguing and fighting in the street, and one of them left the other one there, and he, you know, sat down on the curb and then sort of rolled into the edge of the street and was clearly drunk out of his mind. So my wife and I thought, well, we don't necessarily want to get involved with that. What if he's got a knife or something? So we should call the police. But I didn't know if it was an emergency or not. So I had to look up the police station number, and then they don't just tell you call this number. Mm-hmm. There was like 10 different numbers.
Right.
So I had to figure out which one was the right one to call. And then when I tried calling that one, nobody answered it because it was off hours. So I ended up having to call 911 anyway.
Mm.
And I just thought, at what point in the process was she going through all that and then decided maybe I should just call 911. No, I'll keep going through this and it's not that big of a deal and all. That just struck me a little bit.
That could account for the minutes that it took her to call the police, that's right?
But also, my stepmother is very... she's a worrier by nature and she has a list of every contact number she could ever need in her kitchen. So a lot of people do have non-emergency service
Same
numbers.
With my... You know, because like I said... my aunt and one of my friends was the victim of domestic violence. We're both the victims of domestic violence. And I'll tell you, I had those numbers in my phone. Because you're not necessarily going to call 911, but there was cases when she'd be calling me at night, afraid for her life. And, you know, I knew exactly which police number to call that wasn't 911 to go and check on her and make sure she was okay.
I just, to me, it seems like if calling the non-emergency number was a convenient, easy thing to do, I would be more inclined to... not buy why she said she did it, but more inclined to say, okay, now I won't put as much weight on the fact that she didn't call 911. Yeah. But it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do. That it takes determined effort. And I just think the decision to do that versus just calling 911. I mean, people call 911 because somebody at the drive-thru gave them the wrong food. You know, like people don't just call 911 for life-threatening emergencies. People call 911 like that all the time.
Right, but we shouldn't hold her accountable for having a conscience and not wanting to abuse 911. Right. That seems like a good thing.
Yeah, but if it's a life and death situation.
And we don't know if she had this number easily available or, like you said, if she spent those 14 minutes looking for it.
And again, we also don't know if she realized if it was a life or death situation.
Exactly, which she claims
which I feel like
didn't.
Is a fair assumption, but I know that not everybody agrees with that.
The prosecution, even at the end, when Samantha was on the stand, they said that she called the police because you wanted to know if he was alive or dead, and they categorized like that. And I just feel like that's so errant. If she really wanted to know if he was dead yet, time would tell her that. Like, she doesn't need to call police to ascertain that information.
Exactly.
But if she intended to kill him, she could have just stayed out as long as possible.
Yeah,
and
that always bothered me. And like, if you're trying to kill someone, just wait till you get home from work and then call and be like, hey, I just found my boyfriend.
I think that would be much more suspicious. If she set up the situation and just went about the rest of her workday, that would seem like she's trying to establish an alibi.
Why? Because she had a deadline at work. She has a perfect alibi. Yeah. She had to stay at work for this deadline.
She also knows that they would
show you didn't even try and check on him once. Like, doesn't look suspicious.
That would create suspicion. By having a text trail, she could have written him a note and then burned it when she got home.
Well, and she was a smart woman. I feel like she was trying to do this without drawing attention to herself, she wouldn't have sent that text message.
Based on our debate, it shows that what she did worked, because there's enough that some things are ambiguous and you question why she did it, but it still shows that she did it. So she's not necessarily trying to hide the fact that she did it. She's just trying to stick in a little extra something so that hopefully we could say, well, yeah, I guess he did it on his own. It wasn't her fault. I think if you were going to set up an alibi in a movie or something, this is really an ingenious way to do it. Like we all said, she's a very smart, calculating, intelligent woman.
But if she had the same control over him that many people continuously claim absolute control that she had, even though she herself admitted that Troy would see her cracks in her personality, and that's why she was trying to up her game. If she did have such absolute control, as Lowry had said in her closing statements, she could have given him a gun, and instead of having him kill someone else, she could have just said, now, sub, kill yourself. She could have had him stab himself, hang himself in front of her, and there would have been no text trail. There would have been no call
to the police. Or, like you said, she could
have
left a note and told him to burn it. Yeah.
If she wanted to be dead.
Like, she'd be smart enough to come up with a better way to get away with it.
Yeah,
no, but I mean, look at this. We know that she told him to do it, and we're still debating whether she's guilty or not. So I think to me that means that what she did was really effective.
The six people on Samantha's jury have been accepted as her peers. It's been decided they have no bias. It's been agreed they're capable of sound judgment. They have been specially selected from amongst their community as the most fit to make a determination of this magnitude. And as long as they remain in the deliberations room, Samantha Hall remains uncondemned. Next time on Deliberations.
Tension is high as all eyes focus on the Orange County courthouse.
She is guilty of this action.
What was her motive, Carl? Give me one.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and launches as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast: Jury, Macklin McLaughlin, Sam Britton, Sierra Marks, Lindsay Rousseau, Adam El Shakawi, and Alice Bowden. Courtroom: Allison Brown and Michael Cortez. On the next Jury Break, I speak again to sensitive crimes defense attorney Jessa Nicholson Getz about problems facing our jury system. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss it. Have a wonderful week.